All right. Hey, it's week three of Advent. The theme is joy, and I've been looking forward to this one, honestly. I've kind of been waiting for this one to come along because joy is, in my opinion, a massively mislabeled and misunderstood thing. And I think that just gets cranked up this time of year all the more. So let me say a couple things really just as plainly as I know how. Christians, joy is not like a fringe benefit. Joy is not like a bonus for the really good Christians, all right? Or some sort of add-on luxury for the varsity Christians, the ones who really get it together. Not only do they get like the basic salvation stuff and whatever comes with the package, but they also get the upgraded luxury package and they get joy as well. That's not a thing. When we talked last week about peace, we feel, I think, by default, like peace is something every believer should have. And so when we don't have it, we have a tendency to panic. Like, what's wrong with me? Why don't I have it? Every other Christian seems to have it. I don't. Joy, I think, is on the other end of the spectrum. Joy is something that I think a lot of Christians stopped expecting or even asking for a long time ago, because they just assumed it was for this other category of Christian types. I think joy is often mislabeled as like the religious icing on the cake. The idea being that we go do the Christian thing and we live the Christian life and onward Christian soldier. And if along the way we happen to experience joy, well, then that's a bonus. That's leather heated seats. You know what I mean? Let me tell you a quick story. The McCarter family got a new vehicle a while back. Just a couple months ago now, and so we were car shopping and in that mode for a while. We've entered the minivan community. It's good there, very convenient. All right, no regrets at all. I gave up on being cool long ago, so the minivan is just like practical. Anyway, we're minivan people now, and we were on the car hunt. And at one point, I had the two kids with me in the car, and I said, you know what? I'm just going to get their opinion on this. I said, Bryce, Bree, here's the thing. Mom and Dad, we're car shopping. You know that. And we're thinking we might sometime in the next few months get a new vehicle. And I'm just kind of curious, like, what do you guys want? What are you excited about? And I said, in the end, you know, Mom and Dad will make the decision. And we'll decide what's wise and unwise and what's, you know, we'll do all that. But we care what you think. And I'd love to hear if you've got, you know, opinions. So what do you think? And Bree goes, okay, Dad. She's seven. She goes, I want it to have 4 wheels, seat belts, steering wheel, and a glove box. And I was like, deal. Like, all right. Like, I think we could do all of those things. Yes. And then I looked over to Bryce, and he had this glimmer in his eye, and I was like, all right, Bryce, what about you? First words out of his mouth, he says with real confidence, he goes, I would like for there to be leather heated seats, not just in the front seat, but in the back seat as well. And I'm like, oh, we have a difference of personality emerging right now. This is, I mean, we thought that was the case, but there it is. And then I thought, okay, but he was like, oh no. And then he keeps going. Like, he starts listing every feature, stuff I didn't know was even a thing. And then I remember the last thing he said, and he was like, and I want it to be so awesome and so filled with tech that 2 years later when we get in the car, it's still exciting. And I was like, dude, ain't nothing exciting for 2 years. Like, there's no way. Hey, I'm sorry, buddy. I mean, we'll do our best, but no. but look, I think that sort of excessive over, I think joy gets thrown into that category. All right, the overabundance, the extra on top, the leather heated seats. All right, now think about this, because I'm willing to bet on something. I'm willing to bet that you don't ask God for joy nearly as much as you ask him for peace or maybe health or for some break in a relationship or a break in finances. I bet you don't ask him for joy nearly as much as those other things, because asking for joy somehow feels selfish. It's almost like you're asking for too much. You know, like, let's not be greedy, all right? Peace feels like a reasonable expectation. I should be at peace. But joy, that's let's not be selfish. Let's not be greedy, all right? Guys, that's not it. Like, that's mislabeling joy. Joy is foundational. It's core. It's fundamental. It's essential. Joy is way more like four wheels and seat belts than it is leather heated seats. You understand the point that I'm making? All right, seven of you. Good. Isaiah 61, and this is from our reading today, if you've been going along with us in the Advent guide. Isaiah 61, verse 1, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, for the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to comfort the brokenhearted and to proclaim that captives will be released and prisoners will be freed. He has sent me to tell those who mourn that the time of the Lord's favor has come, and with it the day of God's anger against their enemies. To all who mourn in Israel, he will give a crown of beauty for ashes, a joyous blessing instead of mourning, festive praise instead of despair. In their righteousness, they will be like great oaks that the Lord has planted for his own glory." Doesn't that sound good? I love in Luke chapter 4, where Jesus is at the early going of his public ministry. He stands up at the synagogue. He pulls out the scroll from Isaiah. He reads a portion of these words, which every good Jew knew was foretelling the coming of the Messiah. He just reads them and goes and sits in the front row. Everybody stares awkwardly at the back of his head. And then he turns up to break the awkward silence and says, "Oh yeah, I'm that guy. It's me." All right, and then they tried to kill him. I'm that guy. So I love that we can know with certainty that these verses are about Jesus, because Jesus told us that they were about Jesus. All right, this is about the coming of the Messiah. Now verses 10 and 11, love these words. "I am overwhelmed with joy in the Lord my God, for he has dressed me with the clothing of salvation and draped me in a robe of righteousness. I'm like a bridegroom dressed for his wedding, or a bride with her jewels. The Sovereign Lord will show his justice to the nations of the world. Everyone will praise him. His righteousness will be like a garden in early spring with plants springing up everywhere." All right, he paints quite a picture of joy. So let's work on a definition here. A couple of things. I think we have to start with what it's not. Okay. First off, joy is not happiness. And that's an important, we got to see the difference. Okay, happiness is reliant upon circumstances, and joy isn't. Let that sink in. Joy is not reliant upon circumstances. It's, you know why? It's above it. It's on a higher plane, y'all. It's just bigger than that. And joy and happiness are qualitatively different. All right? Let me add this one. Joy is not a mood that you're in one day and not the next. Can I tell you something? Is it okay if I'm honest here? I probably won't say it in the other two services. Hopefully I'll be over it by then. I woke up in a really bad mood today. You come to church and people ask you how you're doing, and you're supposed to give the churchy answer, "I'm fine." But if you're the preacher, you're supposed to give the extra churchy answer, like, "Bless God, brother, I'm fine." You know what? I'm in a foul mood today. I woke up this morning just with the stank eye, mean mugging it. I don't know what happened. Why? That's the follow-up, because I try not to do the churchy answer. You know, I'm like, I'm kind of not in a great mood. And I had like five people this morning say, "Why?" And every time I was like, I don't know. And then while we're singing "Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee" a moment ago, I think to myself, so help me, if God decided to make me the sermon illustration today because I've got a point about joy not being a mood. And I was like, I think that's what's going on. I immediately felt better. And then I was like, not cool, God. Not cool. I don't know if that's it at all, but that's my theory at the moment. I'm feeling better by the second, though. Joy is not a mood that comes and goes. It's not. It's bigger than that. When I woke up in a bad mood, I could still have the joy of the Lord. All right. Next, joy isn't pleasure. All right. Look, pleasure is a gift from God. All right, those pleasure centers in your body, designed and put in there by him. It's a good thing. But joy is not pleasure. Pleasure is fleeting. Joy is not fleeting. And again, it's just bigger. It's bigger than that. Joy is bigger than pleasure. Let me read you a quote. C.S. Lewis, smart guy, so you're going to want to listen. "We are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in the slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at sea. We're far too easily pleased. Lots of people miss out on joy. You know why? Because they go after pleasure instead. They get the two confused, and they go after pleasure. And pleasure, as I said, it's a good, it's a God-given thing. It is no substitute for joy. It is no, pleasure is a lightweight, and joy is a heavyweight. And if you're settling for pleasure, you are far too easily pleased. So it ain't that either. Here's another one. Joy is not the opposite of sadness. And it's not the absence of sadness. I want you to think about this and warm up to this idea. Truth is, sadness and joy can sometimes coexist together really well. They're not supposed to like cancel each other out. Sometimes they both get cranked up at the same time. I read you a quote, Eugene Peterson. A common but futile strategy. Oh, this is good. Don't miss this. A common but futile strategy for achieving joy is trying to eliminate things that hurt. Get rid of pain by numbing the nerve ends. Get rid of insecurity by eliminating risks from your life. Get rid of disappointment by depersonalizing your relationships. And then try to lighten the boredom of such a life by buying joy in the form of vacations and entertainment. Anybody just get punched in the mouth by Eugene Peterson? I've been punched in the mouth by Eugene a few times. Joy is not finding ways to short circuit sadness. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not that. You have to short circuit your humanity if you're going to short circuit sadness. Joy is not happiness. It is not pleasure. It is not avoiding sadness or the absence of sadness. It's not a mood. All right? So I find it actually pretty easy to say what joy isn't. I find it difficult to actually say what it is. I think joy is hard to define. And a few years ago, I was bothered by the fact that I couldn't define joy. I couldn't put my finger on it. And so I started researching and looking around and seeing what smart people said and reading and reading and reading and reading and reading and reading and reading. And I kept coming across these warm and fuzzy definitions that didn't do it. They just weren't right. And I never felt like I was looking right at it. They were just sort of squinty with aspects of joy, sort of fuzzy, pointing in the direction, but not looking right at it. And then, as a last resort, I went through old books that I had forgotten about. I found a boring old Bible dictionary. I literally, in the stereotypical way, blew the dust off of it. I found what it said about joy. It was several pages, read this long description, and then at the very end, there was this simple two-word summary that was added at the end. And it said that joy is, you ready? Two words. Grace recognized. And finally, I felt like I was looking right at it. Joy is grace recognizing. Recognized. It is acknowledging, it is recognizing the incredible grace of God to us that you're swimming in on your worst day. The question is, do we recognize it? And that recognition of grace, that's the heart of joy. And Christmas is the season of joy for a number of reasons. Presents is not on the list, by the way. Is the season of joy, I think, in large part, because at this time, and with this emphasis, it is hard not to recognize the grace in this all. It's just hard to miss the grace that is found in the Christmas story. So let me read you a quote, Spurgeon. We're reading smart people today. Spurgeon, Christ is the central fact of the world's history. To him, everything looks forward or backward. All the lines of history converge upon him. All the march of providence is guided by him. All the great purposes of God culminate in him. The greatest and most momentous fact that the history of the world records is the fact of his birth. That's saying something. It's hard not to recognize the grace in this. That's what I'm saying. King of the universe, came to us as a baby so that he could live with us and then die for us. That's grace that demands to be recognized. It's hard to miss it. So, like, don't miss it. And don't be robbed of the joy of this season. Don't be robbed. All right? The enemy wants to rob you of it. Don't be robbed of the joy of the season. And because we've got lots of, I think, culturally ingrained stereotypes connected to this, you might push back on that and say, man, look, I'm not Mr. Holly Jolly, all right? And I'm not going to pretend to be. All right? If that's what you're thinking, like, I'm with you. But you could be pushing back right now and you're saying, like, Aaron, I'm not you, all right? I know you've come to enjoy the season, but listen, I'm not you. There's no way I could sit through an entire Hallmark movie. That might be what you're thinking right now. As an aside, let me just say to that end, you shouldn't start with an entire Hallmark movie. That's a varsity move. All right, I've been building up my tolerance for years. All right, I'm 15 years in. You want to start, consider like maybe an animated short and then work your way up. You don't want to start there. Maybe a support group as well. I say that because I have one. The last couple of weeks, I keep getting text messages from husbands saying, I'm watching a Hallmark movie. Like, the last couple of weeks, I've gotten so many of them. And I'm like, me too. May the strength of Christ be with you and with you, my brother. Just back and forth. You can do all things through Christ who gives you strength. Let's do this. Anyway, here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that having joy at Christmas doesn't necessarily fit the culturally ingrained stereotypes you have in your mind. I'm not talking about running around like Will Ferrell and Elf so that you can have joy at Christmas. I actually kind of like that Christmas movie. But that's not what I'm talking about. And if you're thinking, man, things are hard right now, and I'm not going to put on a stupid grin and fake it just because it happens to be December. And if that's where you're at, honestly, bottom of my heart, good for you. Seriously, don't be phony. Phony is the worst. Phony is terrible. But don't miss this. That is not what I'm talking about. Again, do not confuse happiness for joy. It's a cheap counterfeit. I'm talking about recognizing grace and then letting real joy flow from it. So let's go back to our text here. Isaiah 61, verse 10. Listen to the words he says. I am overwhelmed with joy in the Lord my God. That's saying something, isn't it? So Isaiah says that he is overwhelmed with joy. Quick history lesson here. Isaiah, for decades, prophesied to the people of Israel, and they refused to listen. And while he pleaded with them to turn back to the Lord, he watched them self-destruct again and again and again. He, again, for decades, pleaded with his people to turn back to the Lord. They wouldn't listen. Then he watched them rip each other apart in a civil war between Israel and Judah. It was bloody. It was gruesome. And he watched in horror, knowing that if they had turned for their, if they just listened to him, all right, they listened to the Lord speaking through him. And then, while they were weakened from this horrible civil war, the Assyrians attacked and absolutely crushed them to a powder. Then they'll listen to Isaiah, right? Nope, still don't listen to Isaiah. And he continues being this voice crying out. And then Isaiah prophesies about the coming Babylonian exile. And they were going to crush Israel, Jerusalem. It would be utterly destroyed. The people would be marched off into slavery, and it would be the darkest hour in their nation's history. And he saw it coming, and he knew it could be stopped. He knew it how it could be avoided, and no one would listen to him. And he knew no one would listen to him because God told him that too. And in the midst of that, he declares, I am overwhelmed. I am overwhelmed with joy in the Lord my God. Really? You spent your entire adult life spitting into the wind. Really? You're overwhelmed with joy? You're surrounded by suffering and destruction? You're overwhelmed with joy? How? Why? Well, let's just look at the rest of the verse. I'm overwhelmed with joy in the Lord my God. And the how, the why is really simple. It's grace recognized. Here's why. For he has dressed me with the clothing of salvation. And he has draped me in a robe of righteousness. I'm like a bridegroom dressed for his wedding or a bride with her jewels. He's saying, I look good. I have been given the righteousness of Christ. I have been adorned in his splendor, in his salvation. I have eternity with the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And at once he was swimming in destruction and swimming in joy. He recognized the grace, and so he had joy in all that. All right, I'm going to tell you a story. I haven't shared this story from up front before, but I've shared it individually a number of times, and so I know the response that it will create, okay? This is a shocking and rather horrible story, and for a moment you'll think that I'm joking. I'm not, and it's going to feel so uncomfortable that it may create nervous laughter, which is totally inappropriate, and I want you to know, don't worry about it, okay? You will not offend me. However you respond. I mean, if you stand up and mock me, it might not. I'm offendable, okay? But whatever sort of comes out, all right, don't worry about me, all right? Here's the story. It's a bit of a shocker. At my rehearsal dinner, the day before I got married, my pepaw choked on a piece of steak and died. No nervous laughter. Good. Self-control. Can you believe it? I couldn't in the moment. And we were aware of it, and it was after a while we realized what was going on. We all went out to check on him, and then we did everything we could, and there was nothing we could do, and we just sat and watched it. And we prayed, and we thought, will the ambulance ever get here? And the ambulance got there, and it was too late. He still had a pulse, but they took him to the ICU. We all knew it was over. And then for some reason, I don't even remember why, but we had decided that we were going to rehearse for the wedding after the dinner. So we had to go, we went to the church. The ambulance went to the ICU. We went to the church and did an 8-minute, we timed it because I was like, this is going to be something. We did an 8-minute rehearsal and then we went to the ICU. And I'm in the ICU and I'm looking around. I'm a little stunned by what's going on. And then here comes Mamaw, fiery redhead. She comes here sometimes. Don't jack with Mert, all right? No mess with Mert, all right? And she comes up to me, and she just walks beeline straight to me, and she grabs me like this. You know when you get people like this? And she pushes me against the wall, and she said, tomorrow's your wedding. It's your wedding day. You will do everything exactly like you planned it. Don't change a thing. And then she walked off. She didn't take a moment for us to discuss that. There was no give and take. She had spoken. It was final. We were to proceed just as we planned. So, the next day, we had the wedding, and it was amazing. It was the best day of my life. Mamaw came. She danced at the reception with us. And at the reception, we danced for hours. I still have people come and tell me that that's the most fun reception they've ever been to. We danced for hours. It was a party. It was amazing. And the place was just bursting with joy. Now, why is that? Look, let me be clear about why it was. It was not because everything was good. Because it was not. Not everything was good. My pepaw was brain dead in the ICU, and we were just waiting for him to die. We were grieving, and we were stunned, and the day was bursting with joy, and we weren't faking it. We weren't putting on a happy face and pretending. It was real joy. You know why? Because it was my wedding day. It was my wedding day. The joy was real. Because we recognized that there was something worth celebrating. In the midst of that super intense and marred with sadness kind of day. And we celebrated. These things are not mutually exclusive. Look, if things are hard right now, or overly busy right now, or heavy or sad right now, or just bad, you're like, I don't know, things are bad. Okay, well, don't fake it. Don't be phony. Don't act like things aren't the way they are. Don't pretend to be happy if you aren't. But, and please hear me on this, that doesn't mean that you have to miss out on the joy of the birth of Christ our Savior. Because joy is grace recognized. There is grace to be recognized. And if there is grace to be recognized, there is joy to be had. The Bible teaches that the joy of the Lord is our strength. All right, Nehemiah 10, the joy of the Lord is our strength. You know what? You don't need strength when everything's roses. You don't even need it then. You need strength when things are hard. And you need lots of strength when things are really, really hard. Guys, joy is not the icing on the cake or the cherry on top. It's strength. It's fuel to get you through. So we're here. It's Advent. We're awaiting the coming of Christ. Don't fail to stop and recognize the grace in this story. The sovereign over all was born in a reeking, filthy, stinking stable because he loved you so much that he came to rescue you. No matter what's swirling around, make sure that settles in and settles into your heart. And if this season is hard, or just the circumstances around you right now are hard, then the joy of the Lord is not a diversion by which you pretend your problems aren't real. All right? It is, in fact, the very strength that you need to face those problems head on and for the glory of God. If there is grace to be recognized, there is joy to be had. Guys, I partied while my Pepaw was dying. Because it was my wedding day. There was grace to be recognized on that day, and so there was joy to be had. And this is Christmas, all right? Let's not miss the obvious. You know, there's all this other stuff that goes with Christmas, but let's not miss the obvious. Let's like sit and stare at the manger and think, this is incredible. And be a little dumbstruck by it all. And be filled with joy as we recognize the grace of it all.